Disc 9.
Swiftly, Padme and the other Naboo activated the ascension mechanism and were towed up the wall. From behind, in the hallway where her handmaidens and the rest of the Naboo soldiers still held the battle droids at bay, the firing grew more intense. Padme ignored the sounds, forcing herself to continue ahead. When they were on the ledge above, they cast away the cables, and Panaka used his blaster on a window to open a way back into the building. Transparasteel and permacrete shards lay everywhere as they climbed through once more, finding themselves in yet another hallway. They were close to the throne room now. It lay only another story up and several corridors back. Padme felt a fierce exultation. She would have the Nemoidian viceroy as her prisoner yet. But the thought was no sooner completed than a pair of destroyer droids wheeled around one end of the hallway, swiftly transforming into battle mode. Mere seconds later, a second pair appeared at the other end, weapons held at the ready. In a hollow, mechanical monotone, the foremost of the droids ordered them to throw down their weapons. Padme hesitated. There was no possibility for an escape unless they went back out the window, and if they did that, they would be trapped on the ledge and rendered helpless. They could try to fight their way free, but while they stood a reasonable chance against battle droids, they were seriously overmatched by their more powerful cousins. In the wake of this chilling assessment, an inspired thought occurred to her, a solution that might give them the victory they sought in spite of their situation. She straightened, held out her arms in surrender, and tossed aside her blaster. "Throw down your weapons," she ordered Captain Panaka and his soldiers. "They win this round." Panaka blanched. "But, Your Majesty, we can't—" "Captain," Padme interrupted, her eyes locking with his. "I said to throw down your weapons." Panaka gave her a look that suggested he clearly thought she had lost her mind. Then he dropped his blaster to the floor and motioned for his men to do the same. The destroyer droids skittered forward to take them prisoner. But before they reached the Naboo, Padme was able to complete a quick transmission on her comlink. "Have faith, Captain," she urged a bewildered Panaka, her voice cool and collected as she slipped the comlink out of sight again. Things were not going well for the Gungan army. Like the Naboo, the Gungans were no match for the destroyer droids. Slowly but surely they were being pushed back, unable to stand against the relentless Trade Federation attack. Here and there, along their beleaguered lines, cracks were beginning to appear in their defense. Jar Jar Binks was at the heart of one of those points. For a time, his had been one of the strongest positions. His soldiers rallied by what they mistakenly believed to be his unrivaled bravery, turning a rout into a counterattack. But the counterattack had extended itself too far, and with the appearance of the destroyer droids, it collapsed completely. Now Jar Jar and his comrades were in flight, falling back to where the rest of the army crouched in the shadow of the failing generator shield, desperately trying to find a way to regroup. Jar Jar, his Kadu long since lost, was running for his life. Desperate to increase the distance between himself and the pursuing destroyer droids, he caught up with a fleeing wagon filled with dozens of the energy balls used by the Gungan catapults. Grabbing hold of the wagon gate, he tried to haul himself into the bed, the wagon jouncing and creaking over the uneven ground. But in his effort to save himself, he unwittingly released the latch on the gate, causing it to flop open. Energy balls released out the back in a wild tumble, bouncing and rolling backward in a swarm. Jar Jar danced out of the way, scrambling to avoid being struck. He was successful in this, but the less nimble destroyer droids on his heels were not. Energy balls smashed into them, exploding on contact, and droid after droid went up in a rain of fire and shattered metal. "'Tis good!" Jar Jar howled in glee, watching the Federation droids wheeling this way and that in an effort to escape the carpet of energy balls rolling into them. Elsewhere, however, the battle was taking a turn for the worse. Destroyer droids had broken through the Gungan lines fronting the shield generators and were firing their weapons into the machines over and over. The Famba, on which the generators rode, shuddered and dropped to their knees, the generators smoking and sparking. Abruptly, the force field began to waver and fade. OOM-9, watching it all through electro-binoculars, was quick to report back to the Nemoidian command. Federation tanks were ordered forward at once, their guns firing anew. When General Seal saw the shield generators lose power, he realized the battle was lost. The Gungans had done all they could for the Queen of the Naboo. Turning to his staff, he signaled for a retreat. The battle horns sounded the call, wailing out across the grasslands, and the entire Gungan army began to fall back. Jar Jar had gained control of a new mount and was riding madly for the safety of the swamp. Fleeing in the midst of pursuing droids and tanks, he had his Kadu blown out from under him and was thrown sideways onto the back of a nearby tank's gun turret. Hanging on for dear life, he rode the enemy vehicle across the plains as the battle raged on all about him. The droids inside the tank quickly became aware of his presence, and the driver tried to throw him off by swiveling the turret gun from side to side. But Jar Jar had a death grip on the barrel, hugging it tightly to him, and refused to be dislodged. "Help me! Help me!" he screamed out. Captain Tarples, astride a Kadu, worked his way alongside the tank, yelling at Jar Jar to jump. Laser fire ricocheted off the tank, barely missing Jar Jar as he struggled to overcome his fear and break free of his precarious perch. Hatches were beginning to open and droid heads to appear. His eyes widened as he saw weapons being lifted and brought to bear. He jumped then, flinging himself clear of the tank, landing awkwardly behind the Gungan who had stayed to save him. The Kadu, burdened by two riders, lurched wildly, then righted itself and swerved quickly away. Explosions mushroomed all around them, sending gouts of dirt skyward, and Jar Jar Binks, arms wrapped around the other rider, eyes closed in terror against the chaos taking place all around him, was pretty sure that this was the end. Anakin Skywalker, meanwhile, was caught up in the midst of a dogfight between Naboo and Federation starfighters. Still struggling to get off autopilot, he avoided engagement with the enemy, mostly because his craft was flying in an erratic, evasive manner that took it out of combat range every time it got too close for comfort. Fighters were exploding all around him, some so close he could see the pieces as they flew past his canopy. "Whew, boy, this is tense!" he breathed as he tried switch after switch on the control panel, the fighter dipping and yawing in response to his unwelcome interference with its operation. But he was learning the control panel, too, his trial-and-error exploration yielding knowledge of what various switches, buttons, and levers did. The downside to all this was that the firing triggers to the laser guns had locked, and try as he might, he could not find a way to break them free. He glanced up from his search at a loud beep from R2-D2, to find a pair of Federation fighters approaching him head-on. R2, get us off! The astromech droid overrode the rest of what he was going to say with a series of frantic whistles. "I've got control!" Anakin exclaimed in shock. He seized the steering, flipped on the power feeds, and jammed the thruster bars left. To his surprise and everlasting gratitude, the fighter banked sharply in response, and they shot past the fighters and rode into a new swarm of combatants. "Yes! I've got control!" Anakin was ecstatic. "You did it, R2!" The astromech droid beeped at him through the intercom, a short, abrupt exchange. Anakin's eyebrows shot up as he read the display. "Go back to Naboo? Forget it! Qui-Gon told me to stay in this cockpit, and that's what I'm going to do. Now hang on." His enthusiasm overrode his good sense, and he whipped his fighter toward the center of the battle. All of his flying instincts kicked in, and he was back in the pod races on Tatooine, a part of his ship, locked in on the intoxicating challenge of winning. Forgotten was his promise to look after Qui-Gon and Padme. They were too far away for him to think about them now. All that mattered was that he had found his way into space, taken command of a starfighter, and been given a chance to live his dream. An enemy fighter drifted into his sights ahead. "Sit tight, R2," he warned. "I'm going to blast this guy." He brought his ship into firing position behind the Trade Federation craft, remembering belatedly that the triggers to his laser guns were locked. Frantically, he searched for the release. "Which one, R2?" he shouted into his helmet. How do I fire this thing? R2-D2 beeped wildly. Which one? This one? He punched the button the astromech droid had indicated, but instead of releasing the firing mechanism, it accelerated the fighter right past the enemy ship.
Whoa!
Anakin gasped in dismay. Now the Trade Federation fighter was on his tail, maneuvering into firing position against him. Anakin yanked hard on the steering, shooting past the massive Federation battleship, screaming out into the void in a series of evasive actions.
That wasn't the release, the boy screamed into his intercom. That was the overdrive!
R2-D2 whistled a sheepish reply. The enemy fighter was behind them again and closing. Anakin banked his ship hard to the right and brought it back toward the blockade and the swarming fighters. Wrenching the stabilizers in opposite directions, he began to spin his fighter like a top. R2-D2 shrieked in despair.
I know we're in trouble, Anakin shrieked back. Just hang on! The way out of this mess is the way we got into it.
He streaked toward the control station, taking the enemy fighter with him. Laser blasts ripped past him, barely missing. He waited a second longer until he was so close to the battleship that the emblem of the Trade Federation painted on the bridge work loomed like a wall, then engaged the reverse thrusters and banked right again. His fighter nearly stalled, dropping away like a stone for a heart-wrenching moment before stabilizing. The enemy fighter, on the other hand, had no time to respond to the maneuver and rocketed past him into the side of the battleship, exploding in a shower of fire and metal parts. Re-engaging the forward thrusters, Anakin wheeled the ship about, searching for new enemies. Through his canopy, he could see a handful of Naboo starfighters engaged in attacking the Trade Federation flagship. Rick Oley's voice came over the intercom.
Bravo 3! Go for the central bridge!
Copy, Bravo leader, came the response.
A squad of four fighters plummeted toward the battleship, lasers firing, but the big ship's deflector shields turned the attack aside effortlessly. Two of the fighters were hit by cannon fire and exploded into ash. The remaining two broke off the attack.
Their shields are too strong, one of the surviving pilots shouted angrily. We'll never get through!
Anakin, in the meantime, was under attack once more. Another Federation fighter had found him and was giving chase. The boy jammed the thruster bars forward and sped down the hull of the flagship, twisting and turning through its channels and around its tangle of protrusions, laser fire ricocheting past in a constant stream.
I know this isn't pod racing, Anakin snapped at R2-D2 as the astromech droid beeped reprovingly at him.
But in his heart, he felt as if it were. A fierce glee rushed through him as he whipped the Naboo fighter along the length of the battleship. The speed and the quickness of the battle fed into him a rush of adrenaline. He would not have been anywhere else for the world. But this time, his luck ran out. As he neared the ship's tail, a laser blast struck his fighter a solid blow, knocking it into a stomach-lurching spin. R2-D2 screamed anew, and Anakin fought desperately to regain control.
Great gobs of Banthapoodoo, the boy hissed, fighting to stabilize his stricken craft.
He was hurtling directly toward the hull, and he pulled back on the thruster bars, cutting power and drifting into a long slide. He regained control too late to turn back and pointed the ship toward a giant opening at the battleship's center. Cannon fire whipped all about him as the droids controlling the flagship's guns tried to bring him down. But he was past them in a microsecond, rocketing into the battleship's cavernous main hangar. Reverse thrusters on full power, dodging transports, tanks, fighters, and stacks of supplies, he struggled to keep his fighter airborne as he looked for a place to land. R2-D2 was beeping wildly.
I'm trying to stop, Anakin shouted in reply. Whoa, whoa, I'm trying!
The Naboo fighter struck the decking and bounced, reverse thrusters powering up in an effort to break the craft. A bulkhead loomed ahead, blocking the way. Anakin brought the fighter down on the decking with a bone-jarring thud and held it there, skidding down the rampway in a screech of metal. The fighter slowed and did a half-turn and came to an unsteady halt. The power drive stalled and then failed completely. R2-D2 whistled in relief.
All right,
Anakin gasped, nodding to himself.
We're down. Let's get the engine started again and get out of here.
He ducked down to adjust the feeders to the fuel lines, checking the control panel indicators worriedly.
Lights are all red, R2. Everything's overheated.
He was working on the coolants when R2-D2 beeped suddenly in warning. The boy popped his head over the edge of the cockpit and looked out into the hangar.
Uh-oh,
he muttered softly. Dozens of battle droids were approaching across the hangar floor, weapons raised menacingly. Their only escape route was blocked. 23. Obi-Wan Kenobi prowled the front end of the service corridor to the melting pit like a caged animal. He was furious at himself for getting trapped so far from Qui-Gon, and furious with Qui-Gon for letting this happen by rushing ahead instead of waiting for him. But he was worried, too. He could admit it to himself, privately, if only just. They should have won this battle long ago. Against any other opponent, they would have. But the Sith Lord was battle-trained and seasoned well beyond anyone they had ever encountered before. He had matched them blow for blow, and they weren't any closer to winning this fight now than they had been in the beginning. Obi-Wan stared down the length of the corridor, measuring the distance he would have to travel to reach Qui-Gon and his antagonist when the lasers paused. He had caught a glimpse of them deactivating while rushing to catch up with Qui-Gon, then of reactivating again in a matter of seconds. He would have to be quick, very quick. He did not want the master facing this tattooed madman alone. Down the way, pinned between two walls of laser beams, Qui-Gon Jinn knelt in meditation, facing toward the Sith Lord and the melting pit, his head lowered over his lightsaber. He was gathering himself for a final assault, bringing himself in tune with the Force. Obi-Wan did not like the weariness he saw in the slump of the older man's shoulders, in the bow of his back. He was the best swordsman Obi-Wan had ever seen, but he was growing old. Beyond, the Sith Lord worked at binding up his wounds, a series of burns and slashes marked by charred tears in his dark clothing. He was back to the edge of the chamber beyond, keeping a close watch on Qui-Gon, his red and black face intense, his yellow eyes glinting in the half-light. His lightsaber rested on the floor before him. He saw Obi-Wan staring, and smiled in open derision. At that instant, the laser beams warding the service corridor went off. Obi-Wan sprinted ahead, launching himself down the narrow passageway, lightsaber raised. Qui-Gon was on his feet as well, his own weapon flashing. He catapulted through the opening that led into the melting pit and closed with the Sith Lord, forcing him back, out of the passageway completely. Obi-Wan put on a new burst of speed, howling out at the antagonists ahead, as if by the sound of his voice he could bring them back to him. Then he heard the buzz of the capacitors kicking in once more, cycling to reactivate the lasers. He threw himself ahead, still too far from the corridor's end. He cleared all the gates but the last, and the lasers crisscrossed before him in a deadly wall, bringing him to an abrupt stop just short of where he needed to be. Lightsaber clutched in both hands, he stood watching helplessly as Qui-Gon Jinn and Darth Maul battled on the narrow ledge that encircled the melting pit. A stream of electrons was all that separated him from the combatants, but it might as well have been a wall of permacrete 3 meters thick. Desperately, he cast about for a triggering device that might shut the system down, but he had no better luck here than he'd had at the other end. He could only watch and wait and pray that Qui-Gon could hold on. It appeared that the Jedi Master would. He had found a fresh reserve of strength during his meditation, and now he was attacking with a ferocity that seemed to have the Sith Lord stymied. With quick, hard strokes of his lightsaber, he bored into his adversary, deliberately engaging in close-quarters combat, refusing to let the other bring his double-bladed weapon to bear. He drove Darth Maul backward about the rim of the overhang, keeping the Sith Lord constantly on the defensive, pressing in on him steadily. Qui-Gon Jinn might no longer be young, but he was still powerful. Darth Maul's ragged face took on a frenzied look, and the glitter of his strange eyes brightened with uncertainty.
"Good master,"
Obi-Wan thought, urging him on voicelessly, anticipating Qui-Gon's sword strokes as if they were his own. Then Darth Maul backflipped across the melting pit, giving himself some space in which to recover, gaining just enough time to assume a new battle stance. Qui-Gon was on him in an instant, covering the distance separating them in a rush, hammering into the Sith Lord anew. But he was beginning to weary now from carrying the battle alone. His strokes were not so vigorous as before, his face bathed with sweat and taut with fatigue. Slowly, Darth Maul began to edge his way back into the fight, becoming the aggressor once more.
"Hurry!" Obi-Wan hissed soundlessly, willing the lasers to pause and the gates to come down.
Stroke for stroke, Qui-Gon and Darth Maul battled about the rim of the melting pit, locked in a combat that seemed endless and forever, and could be won by neither. Then the Sith Lord parried a downstroke, whirled swiftly to the right, and with his back to the Jedi Master made a blind reverse lunge. Too late, Qui-Gon recognized the danger. The blade of the Sith Lord's lightsaber caught him directly in the midsection, its brilliant length burning through clothing and flesh and bone. Obi-Wan thought he heard the Jedi Master scream, then realized it was himself, calling his friend's name in despair. Qui-Gon made no sound as the blade entered him, stiffening with the impact, then taking a small step back as it was withdrawn. He stood motionless for an instant, fighting against the shock of the killing blow. Then his eyes clouded, his arms lowered, and a great weariness settled over his proud features. He dropped to his knees, and his lightsaber clattered to the stone floor. He was slumped forward and motionless when the lasers abruptly went off again, and Obi-Wan Kenobi, seething with rage, rushed to his rescue. Newt Gunray stood with Roon Hakko and four members of the Trade Federation Occupation Council as Captain Panaka, one of the Queen's handmaidens, and the six Naboo soldiers who had fought to protect them were marched into the Theed Palace throne room by a squad of 10 battle droids. The Viceroy recognized Panaka at once, but he was unclear as to the identity of the handmaiden who accompanied him. He was looking for the Queen, and while this handmaiden bore a certain resemblance to her, he caught himself in surprise. It was the Queen, without her makeup and ornate robes, stripped of her symbols of office. She looked even younger than she had in ceremonial garb, but her eyes and that cool gaze were unmistakable. He glanced at Roon Hakko and saw the same confusion mirrored in his associate's face. "Your Highness," he greeted as she was led up to him. "Viceroy," she replied, confirming his conclusion as to her identity. That settled, he swiftly assumed the pose of a captor confronting his captive. "Your little insurrection is at an end, Your Highness. The rabble army you sent against us south of the city has been crushed. The Jedi are being dealt with elsewhere, and you are my captive." "Am I?" she asked quietly. The way she spoke the words was unnerving. There was something challenging in the way she said them, as if she were daring him to disagree. Even Panaka turned to look at her. "Yes, you are." He pressed ahead, wondering suddenly if he had missed something. His face lifted. "It is time for you to put an end to the pointless debate you instigated in the Republic Senate. Sign the treaty now." There was a commotion outside the doorway leading into the throne room, the sound of blasters and the shattering of metal. And all at once, Queen Amidala was standing in the anteway beyond. A clutch of battle droids collapsed on the floor, and a handful of Naboo soldiers warding their queen against the appearance of more. "I will not be signing any treaty, Viceroy," she called out to him, already beginning to move away. "You've lost." For a moment, Newt Gunray was so stunned he could not make himself move. A second queen? But this was the real one, dressed in her robes of office, wearing her white face paint, speaking to him in that imperious voice he had come to recognize so well. He wheeled toward the battle droids holding Panaka and the false queen at bay. "You six! After her!" He gestured in the direction of the disappearing Amidala. "Bring her to me! The real one this time, not some decoy!" The droids he had indicated rushed from the room in pursuit of the queen and her guards, leaving the Nemoidians and the four remaining droids with their Naboo captives. Gunray wheeled on the handmaiden. "Your queen will not get away with this," he snapped, enraged at having been deceived. The handmaiden seemed to lose all her bravado, turning away from him with her head lowered in defeat, moving slowly toward the queen's throne and slumping dejectedly into it. Newt Gunray dismissed her almost at once, turning his attention to the other Naboo, anxious to have them taken away to the camps. But in the next instant, the handmaiden was back on her feet, any sign of dejection or weariness banished, a blaster in either hand, pulled from a hidden compartment in the arm of the throne. Tossing one of the blasters to Captain Panaka, she began firing the second into the depleted squad of battle droids. The droids were caught completely by surprise, their attention fixed on the Naboo guards, and the handmaiden and Panaka dispatched them in a flurry of shots that left the throne room ringing with the sound of weapons fire. Shouting instructions to the Naboo, the handmaiden, if that's who she really was, because by now Newt Gunray was beginning to think otherwise, moved to the throne room doors, triggering the locks. The doors swung shut, the bolts engaged, and the girl smashed the locking mechanism with the butt of her weapon. She turned then to the Nemoidians, who were huddled together in confusion at the center of the room, eyes darting this way and that in a futile search for help. All the battle droids lay shattered on the floor, and the Naboo had seized their blasters. The handmaiden walked up to Gunray. "Let's start again, Viceroy," she said coolly. "Your Highness," he replied, tight-lipped, realizing the truth too late. She nodded. "This is the end of your occupation." He stood his ground. "Don't be absurd. There are too few of you. It won't be long before hundreds of destroyer droids break in here to rescue us." Even before he finished, there was the sound of heavy wheels in the anteway, then of metal bodies unfolding. The Viceroy permitted himself a satisfied smile. "You see, Your Highness, rescue is already at hand." The Queen gave him a hard look. "Before they make it through that door, we will have negotiated a new treaty, Viceroy, and you will have signed it." Free at last of the laser wall, Obi-Wan Kenobi charged out of the service tunnel and into the chamber that housed the melting pit. Abandoning any pretense of observing even the slightest caution, he barreled into Darth Maul with such fury that he almost knocked both of them off the ledge and into the abyss. He struck at the Sith Lord with his lightsaber as if his own safety meant nothing, lost in a red haze of rage and frustration, consumed by his grief for Qui-Gon and his failure to prevent his friend's fall. The Sith Lord was borne backward by the Jedi Knight's initial rush, caught off guard by the other's wild assault, and pressed all the way back to the far wall of the melting pit. There he struggled to keep the young Jedi at bay, trying to open enough space between them to defend himself. Lightsabers scraped and grated against each other, and the chamber echoed with their fury. Lunging and twisting, Darth Maul regained the offensive and counterattacked, using both ends of his lightsaber in an effort to cut Obi-Wan's legs out from under him. But Obi-Wan, while not so experienced as Qui-Gon, was quicker. Anticipating each blow, he was able to elude his antagonist's efforts to bring him down. The struggle took them around the edge of the melting pit and into the nooks and alcoves beyond, into shadowed recesses and around smoky pillars and pipe housings. Twice, Obi-Wan went down, losing his footing on the smooth flooring of the melting pit's rim. Once, Darth Maul hammered at him with such determination that he scorched the young Jedi's tunic, shoulder to waist, and it was only by countering with an upthrust counterstrike to the other's midsection and by rolling quickly away and back to his feet that Obi-Wan was able to escape. They fought their way back toward the laser-riddled service passage, past Qui-Gon's still form, and into a tangle of vent tubes and circuit housings. Steam burst from ruptured pipes, and the air was filled with the acrid smell of scorched wiring. Darth Maul began to use his command of the Force to fling heavy objects at Obi-Wan, trying to throw him off balance, to disable him, to disrupt the flow of his attack. Obi-Wan responded in kind, and the air was filled with deadly missiles. Lightsabers flicked right and left to ward off the objects, and the clash of errant metal careening off stone walls formed an eerie shriek in the gloom. The battle wore on, and for a time it was fought evenly. But Darth Maul was the stronger of the two, and was driven by a frenzy that surpassed even the frantic determination that fueled Obi-Wan. Eventually, the Sith Lord began to wear the young Jedi down. Bit by bit, he pressed him back, carrying the attack to him, looking to catch him off guard. Obi-Wan could sense his body weakening, and his fear of what it would mean if he too were to fall began to grow. "Never," he swore furiously. Qui-Gon's words came back to him. "Don't center on your fears. Concentrate on the here and now." He struggled to do so, to contain the emotions warring within and bearing him down. "Be mindful of the living force, my young Padawan. Be strong." Sensing his opportunity slipping away from him and his strength waning, Obi-Wan mounted a final assault. He rushed the Sith Lord with a series of side blows designed to bring the two-bladed lightsaber horizontal. Then he feinted an attack to his enemy's left and brought his own lightsaber over and down with such force that he severed the other's weapon. Crying out in fury, he cut triumphantly at the Sith Lord's horned head, a killing blow, and missed completely. Darth Maul, anticipating the maneuver, had stepped smoothly away. Discarding the lesser half of his severed weapon, he counterattacked swiftly, striking at Obi-Wan with enough force that he knocked the young Jedi sideways and off balance. Quickly he struck him again, harder still, and this time Obi-Wan lost his footing completely and tumbled over the edge of the pit, his lightsaber flying from his hand. For an instant he was falling, tumbling away into the dark. He reached out in desperation and caught hold of a metal rung just below the lip of the pit. There he hung, helpless, staring up at a triumphant Darth Maul. When Anakin Skywalker got a look at the number of battle droids surrounding his starfighter, he ducked back out of sight again at once. If it had been at all possible, he would have vanished into the ship's fuselage and wheeled them both right through the hangar floor to a safer haven. "This is not good," he told himself softly. Sweat beaded on his forehead as he tried to decide what to do. He was just a boy, but he had experience with being in tight places and a cool head when it came to dealing with trouble. "Find a way out of this," he admonished himself. A quick glance at the main and sub-level control panels revealed that all the indicator lights were still red. No help there. "R2," he whispered. "The systems are still overheated. Can you do something?" Footsteps approached, and a metallic droid voice demanded, "Where is your pilot?" R2-D2 beeped bravely in reply. "You are the pilot?" The astromech droid whistled affirmatively. There was a confused pause. "Show me your identification," the battle droid commanded, reverting to rote. Anakin could hear the sound of switches clicking and circuits kicking in. R2-D2 was still trying to save them. Good old R2. The astromech droid beeped softly at Anakin, and the boy saw the system's lights change abruptly from red to green. "Yes, R2, he hissed in relief. "We're up and running." He threw the ignition switches, and the fighter's engines roared to life. Swiftly, he leapt from hiding and took his place in the pilot seat, hands reaching for the steering. The droid commander saw him now and brought up his weapon. "Leave the cockpit immediately, or we will disable your craft."
"Not if I can help it," the boy threw back, reaching for the deflectors. "Shields up!"
Hauling back on the steering, he released the anti-grav lifts. The starfighter rose from the hangar floor, throwing off the droid commander, sending him sprawling in a crumpled heap. The droids under his command began firing their blasters, the laser beams ricocheting off the fighter's deflectors, angling away in a tangle of bright streamers. R2-D2 beeped wildly.
"The gun locks are off," Anakin exclaimed with a joyful shout. "Now we'll show them."
He punched in the firing buttons and held them down, rotating the fighter clockwise above the hangar floor. Laser beams rocketed in a pinwheel pattern, scything into the unprotected battle droids, disabling them before they could even think to flee. Anakin was howling with glee, caught up in the exhilaration of finding himself back in control. Lasers firing, he swept the hangar floor clean of droids, watching those still distant rush for cover, watching ships and supplies fly apart as the deadly beams cut through them. Then, something moved at the end of a long corridor, no more than a shadow. And deep inside, his instincts kicked into high gear, shrieking at him in a frenzy of need. He didn't know if what he was seeing was a weapon or a machine or something else, and it didn't matter. He was back in the pod races, locked in battle with Sebulba, and he could see what no one else could, what was hidden from all others. He reacted without thinking, responding to a voice that spoke to him alone, that whispered always of the future while warding him in the present. Acting of its own accord, faster than thought, his hand left the laser firing buttons and threw a double-hinged switch to the right. Instantly, a pair of torpedoes sped down the corridor in the direction of the shadow. The torpedoes whipped past the battle droids, supply stacks, transports, and everything else, and disappeared through a broad vent. The boy groaned.
Darn! Missed everything!
Giving the matter no further thought, he swung the fighter about swiftly and threw the thruster bars forward. The power drive kicked in with a ferocious roar, and the starfighter shot across the hangar deck, scattered droids in every direction, and catapulted back out into space, cannon fire from the battleship chasing after it in a stream of deadly white fire. Darth Maul walked slowly to the edge of the melting pit, tattooed face bathed in sweat, eyes wild and bright with joy. The battle was finished. The last Jedi was about to be dispatched. He smiled and shifted the remnant of his shattered lightsaber from one hand to the other, savoring the moment. Eyes fixed on the Sith Lord, Obi-Wan Kenobi went deep inside himself, connecting with the Force he had worked so hard to understand. Calming himself, stilling the trembling of his heart and banishing his anger and fear, he called upon the last of his reserves. With clarity of purpose and strength of heart, he launched himself away from the side of the pit and catapulted back toward its lip. Imbued with the power of the Force, he cleared the rim easily, somersaulting behind the Sith Lord in a single, smooth, powerful motion. Even as he landed, he was drawing Qui-Gon Jinn's fallen lightsaber to his outstretched hand. Darth Maul whirled to confront him, shock and rage twisting his red and black face. But before he could act to save himself, Qui-Gon's lightsaber slashed through his chest, burning him with killing fire. The stricken Sith Lord howled in pain and disbelief. Then Obi-Wan turned, thumbed his saber off, and watched his dying enemy tumble away into the pit.
"Whoa! This is way better than pod racing!" Anakin Skywalker shouted at R2-D2,
grinning broadly as he zigzagged his Naboo fighter back and forth to throw the gunners off. The astromech droid was beeping and chirping as if he had fried all his circuits, but the boy refused to listen, rolling and banking the starfighter wildly, angling back toward Naboo and away from the control station. Then a shocked voice came over the intercom from another of the fighters.
"Bravo, leader! What's happening to the control ship?"
In the next instant, a flash of pulsing light swept past him. He glanced over his shoulder and saw the battleship he had escaped racked by a series of explosions. Huge chunks tore away from the core, hurtling into space.
"It's blowing up from the inside!" the voice on the intercom exclaimed.
"Wasn't us, Bravo 2," Rick Olie replied quickly. "We never hit it."
The battleship continued to break apart, the explosions tearing through it, shattering it, engulfing it, and finally consuming it all together in a brilliant ball of light. Debris flew past the canopy of Anakin's fighter, and the light of the explosions faded to black.
Look!
Bravo 2 broke the sudden silence anew.
That's one of ours! Out of the main hold! Must have been him!
Anakin cringed. He had hoped he might get back to the planet unseen, avoid having to explain to Qui-Gon what he was doing up here. There was no chance of that now. R2-D2 beeped reprovingly at him.
I know,
he muttered wearily, and wondered just how much trouble he had gotten himself into this time.
Blaster shots hammered into the door of the throne room in the palace at Theed. Captain Panaka and the Naboo soldiers spread out to either side in a defensive stance, preparing a crossfire for the droids. Newt Gunray wanted to move out of range, but the Queen was still facing him, her blaster leveled at his midsection, and he did not care to risk provoking her into a hasty action. So he stood there with the others of the Trade Council, frozen in place. Then, abruptly, everything went still. All sound of weapons fire and droid movement beyond the battered throne room doors ceased. Captain Panaka looked at the Queen, his dark face uncertain.
"What's going on?" he asked worriedly.
Amidala, her weapon pointed at Newt Gunray, shook her head.
"Try communications. Activate the view screens."
Her head of security moved quickly to do so. All eyes were on him as he slowly brought the outer screens into focus. On the Naboo grasslands, the Gungan army had been overrun. Some of the Gungans had escaped back into the swamp on their Kadu, and some had fled into the hills west. All were being chased by battle droids on staps and by Trade Federation tanks. There was not much hope that they would remain free for long. Most of the Gungans had already been taken prisoner, Jar Jar Binks among them. He stood now in a group of Gungan officers that included General Seal. All around them, their fellow Gungans were being herded away by Trade Federation droids.
"'Dis very bombard,' Jar Jar ventured disconsolately.
General Seal nodded, equally forlorn.
"'Me hope dis workin' for de Queen.'
Jar Jar sighed. And Annie, Qui-Gon, Obi-Wan, R2, and all the rest. He wondered what had happened to them. Had they been captured, too? He thought suddenly of Boss Nass. The boss wasn't going to like this one bit. Jar Jar hoped he wasn't going to get the blame, but he couldn't quite rule out the possibility. Suddenly, all the droids started shaking violently. Some began to run around in circles, others to dip and sway as if their gears had snapped and their circuits shorted out. Tanks skidded to a halt, and staps crashed. All activity came to a complete stop. Jar Jar and General Seal exchanged a confused look. The droid army had locked up. For as far as the eye could see, it stood frozen in place. Gungan prisoners stared at the motionless droids. Finally, at General Seal's urging, Jar Jar edged out of the containment circle and touched one of his metal captors. The droid tipped over and lay lifeless on the grass.
"Dis loony,"
Jar Jar whispered, and wondered what in the world was going on. Obi-Wan did not pause to consider what it had cost him to win his victory over Darth Maul, but rushed immediately to Qui-Gon. Kneeling at the Jedi Master's side, he lifted his head and shoulders and cradled him gently in his arms.
"Master," he breathed in a whisper.
Qui-Gon's eyes opened.
"Too late, my young Padawan."
"No." Obi-Wan shook his head violently in denial.
"Now you must be ready, whether the Council thinks you so or not. You must be the teacher."
The strong face twisted in pain, but the dark eyes were steady.
"Obi-Wan, promise me you will train the boy."
Obi-Wan nodded instantly, agreeing without thinking, willing to say or do anything that would ease the other's pain, desperate to save him.
"Yes, master."
Qui-Gon's breathing quickened.
"He is the chosen one, Obi-Wan. He will bring balance to the Force. Train him well."
His eyes locked on Obi-Wan's and lost focus.
His breathing stopped. The strength and the life went out of him.
Master,
Obi-Wan Kenobi repeated softly, still holding him, bringing him closer now, hugging the lifeless body against his chest, and crying softly.
Master.
24. 3 days later, Obi-Wan Kenobi stood in a small room of the Theed Temple, in which the deaths of heroes were mourned and their lives celebrated. Qui-Gon Jinn's body lay in state on a bier in the plaza just outside, awaiting cremation. Already the citizenry and officials of the Naboo and the Gungan peoples were gathering to honor the Jedi Master. Much had changed in the lives of those who had fought in the struggle for Naboo sovereignty. With the collapse of the droid army, the Trade Federation's control over Naboo had been broken. All of the ground transports, tanks, staps, and weapons and supplies were in the hands of the Republic. Viceroy Newt Gunray, his lieutenant Roon Hakko, and the remainder of the Nemoidian Occupation Council had been shipped as prisoners to Coruscant to await trial. Senator Palpatine had been elected as Supreme Chancellor of the Republic, and he had promised swift action in the dispensing of justice to the captives. Queen Amidala had outfoxed the Nemoidians one final time by pretending to surrender so she could gain safe access to the Viceroy before he had time to flee. She had communicated to Sabe to break away from the struggle taking place several floors below and to use the service passages to reach the Queen's chambers and then make her appearance before the Viceroy. It was a calculated risk, and Sabe might not have been able to get there in time. Had she not, Amidala would have triggered the secret compartment release and fought for her freedom in any case. She was young, but she was not without courage or daring. She had shown intelligence and insight from the beginning of the time the Jedi had come to assist her. Obi-Wan thought she would make a very good queen. But it was a 9-year-old boy who had saved them all. Even without knowing exactly what he was doing, Anakin Skywalker had flown a starfighter into the teeth of the Federation defense, penetrated their shields, landed in the belly of the Nemoidian flagship, torpedoed the ship's reactor, and set off a chain reaction of explosions that destroyed the control station. It was the destruction of the central transmitter that had caused the droid army to freeze in place, their communications effectively short-circuited. Anakin claimed not to have attacked with any sort of plan in mind or fired his starfighter's torpedoes with any expectation of hitting the reactor. But after hearing the boy's tale and questioning him thoroughly, Obi-Wan believed Anakin was guided by something more than the thinking of ordinary men. That extraordinarily high midichlorian count gave the boy a connection to the Force that even Jedi Masters on the order of Yoda might never achieve. Qui-Gon, he now believed, had been right. Anakin Skywalker was the Chosen One. He paced the room, dressed in fresh clothing for the funeral, soft, loose-fitting, sand-colored Jedi knight garb, Qui-Gon's lightsaber, now his own, hanging from his belt. The Jedi Council had come to Naboo for the funeral and to speak again with Anakin. They were doing so now, close by, making a final assessment based on what had transpired since their last session with the boy. Obi-Wan thought the outcome of their deliberations must be a foregone conclusion. He could not imagine now that it wouldn't be. He stopped his pacing and stared momentarily at nothing, thinking of Qui-Gon Jinn, his master, his teacher, his friend. He had failed Qui-Gon in life, but he would carry on his work now, honoring him in death by fulfilling his promise to train the boy, no matter what. "Listen to me," he thought, smiling ruefully. "I sound like him." The door opened, and Yoda appeared. He entered the room in a slow shuffle, leaning on his walking stick, his wizened face sleepy-eyed and contemplative. "Master Yoda," Obi-Wan greeted, hurrying forward to meet him, bowing deferentially. The Jedi Master nodded.
"Confer on you the level of Jedi Knight, the Council does. Decided about the boy, the Council is, Obi-Wan," he advised solemnly.
"He is to be trained?" The big ears cocked forward, and the lids to those sleepy eyes widened.
"So impatient you are. So sure of what has been decided?"
Obi-Wan bit his tongue and kept his silence, waiting dutifully on the other. Yoda studied him carefully.
"A great warrior was Qui-Gon Jinn,"
he gargled softly, his strange voice sad.
"But so much more he could have been, if not so fast he had run. More slowly you must proceed, Obi-Wan."
Obi-Wan stood his ground. He understood what the rest of us did not about the boy. But Yoda shook his head.
"Be not so quick to judge. Not everything is understanding. Not all at once is it revealed. Years it takes to become a Jedi Knight. Years more to become one with the Force."
He moved over to a place where the fading light shone in through a window, soft and golden. Sunset approached, the appointed time for their farewell to Qui-Gon. Yoda's gaze was distant when he spoke.
"Decided, the council is," he repeated. "Trained, the boy shall be."
Obi-Wan felt a surge of relief and joy flood through him, and a grateful smile escaped him. Yoda saw the smile.
"Pleased you are. So certain this is right."
The wrinkled face tightened.
"Clouded this boy's future remains, Obi-Wan. A mistake to train him it is."
"But the council..."
"Yes, decided."
The sleepy eyes lifted.
"Disagree with that decision, I must."
There was a long silence as the two faced each other, listening to the sounds of the funeral preparations taking place without. Obi-Wan did not know what to say. Clearly, the council had decided against the advice of Yoda. That in itself was unusual. That the Jedi Master chose to make a point of it here emphasized the extent of his concerns about Anakin Skywalker. Obi-Wan spoke carefully. "I will take this boy as my Padawan, Master. I will train him in the best way I can. But I will bear in mind what you have told me here. I will go carefully. I will heed your warnings. I will keep close watch over his progress." Yoda studied him a moment, then nodded.
"Your promise, then, remember well, young Jedi,"
he said softly.
"Sufficient it is if you do."
Obi-Wan bowed in acknowledgment. "I will remember." Together, they went out into a blaze of light. The funeral pyre was lit, the fire building steadily around the body of Qui-Gon Jinn, the flames slowly beginning to envelop and consume him. Those who had been chosen to honor him encircled the pyre. Queen Amidala stood with her handmaidens, Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, Governor C.O. Bibble, Captain Panaka, and an honor guard of 100 Naboo soldiers. Boss Nass, Jar Jar Binks, and 20 Gungan warriors stood across from them. Linking them together were the members of the Jedi Council, including Yoda and Mace Windu. Another clutch of Jedi Knights, those who had known Qui-Gon longest and best, completed the circle. Anakin Skywalker stood with Obi-Wan, his young face intense as he fought to hold back his tears. A long, sustained drumroll traced the passage of the flames as they reduced Qui-Gon to spirit and ash. When the fire had taken him away, a flight of snowy doves was released into a crimson sunset. The birds rose in a flutter of wings and a splash of pale brilliance, winging swiftly away. Obi-Wan found himself remembering. For his entire life, he had studied under the Jedi, and Qui-Gon Jinn in particular. Now Qui-Gon was gone, and Obi-Wan had passed out of an old life and into a new. Now he was a Jedi Knight, not a Padawan. Everything that had gone before was behind a door that had closed on him forever. It was hard to accept, and at the same time it gave him an odd sense of release. He looked down at Anakin. The boy was staring at the ashes of the funeral bier, crying softly. He put his hand on one slim shoulder. "He is one with the Force, Anakin. You must let him go." The boy shook his head.
"I miss him."
Obi-Wan nodded. "I miss him too, and I will remember him always. But he is gone." Anakin wiped the tears from his face.
"What will happen to me now?"
The hand tightened on the boy's shoulder. "I will train you, just as Qui-Gon would have done," Obi-Wan Kenobi said softly. "I am your new master, Anakin. You will study with me, and you will become a Jedi Knight. I promise you." The boy straightened, a barely perceptible act. Obi-Wan nodded to himself. Somewhere, he thought, Qui-Gon Jinn would be smiling. Across the way, Mace Windu stood with Yoda, his strong, dark face contemplative as he watched Obi-Wan put his hand on Anakin Skywalker's shoulder. "One life ends, and a new one begins in the Jedi Order," he murmured, almost to himself. Yoda hunched forward, leaning on his gnarled staff, and shook his head.
"Not so sure of this one as of Qui-Gon, do I feel. Troubled he is, wrapped in shadows and difficult choices."
Mace Windu nodded. He knew Yoda's feelings on the matter, but the Council had made its decision. "Obi-Wan will do a good job with him," he said, shifting the subject. "Qui-Gon was right. He is ready." They knew of what the young Padawan had done to save himself from the Sith Lord in the Melting Pit after Qui-Gon had been struck down. It took an act of extraordinary courage and strength of will. Only a Jedi Knight, fully in tune with the Force, could have saved himself against such an adversary. Obi-Wan Kenobi had proved himself beyond everyone's expectations that day.
"Ready this time he was,"
Yoda acknowledged grudgingly.
"Ready to train the boy? He may not be."
"Defeating a Sith Lord in combat is a strong test of his readiness for anything," the Council leader pressed. His eyes stayed with Obi-Wan and Anakin. "There is no doubt. The one who tested him was a Sith." Yoda's sleepy eyes blinked.
"Always two there are. No more, no less. A master and an apprentice."
Mace Windu nodded. "Then which one was destroyed, do you think? The master or the apprentice?" They looked at each other now, but neither could provide an answer to the question. That night, Darth Sidious stood alone on a balcony overlooking the city, a shadowy figure amid the multitude of twinkling lights, his visage dark and angry as he contemplated the loss of his apprentice. Years of training had gone into the preparation of Darth Maul as a Sith Lord. He had been more than the equal of the Jedi Knights he had faced, and should have been able to defeat them easily. It was bad luck and chance that had led to his death, a combination that even the power of the dark side could not always overcome. Not in the short run, at least. His brow furrowed. It would be necessary to replace Darth Maul. He would need to train another apprentice. Such a one would not be easy to find. Darth Sidious walked to the railing and put his hands on the cool metal. One thing was certain. Those responsible for killing Darth Maul would be held accountable. Those who had opposed him would not be forgotten. All would be made to pay. His eyes glittered. Still, he had gotten what he wanted most from this business. Even the loss of Darth Maul was worth that. He would bide his time. He would wait for his chance. He would lay the groundwork for what was needed. A smile played across his thin lips. A day of reckoning would come about soon enough. There was a grand parade the following day to publicly recognize the newfound alliance of the Naboo and Gungan peoples, to celebrate their hard-fought victory over the Trade Federation invaders, and to honor those who had fought to secure the planet's freedom.
Crowds lined the streets of Theed as columns of Gungan warriors astride Kadu and Nabu soldiers aboard speeders rode through the city to the sounds of cheering and singing. Fumba lumbered down the avenues, draped in rich silks and embroidered harnesses, heads weaving from side to side on long necks. Here and there, a captured Federation tank hovered amidst the marchers, Nabu and Gungan flags flying from cannons and hatchways. Jar Jar Binks and General Seal led the Gungans, both riding their Kadu, Jar Jar managing to stay aboard this time for the entire parade, though he looked to those in attendance to be having a bit of trouble doing so. Captain Panaka and the Queen's own guards stood at the top of the stone steps in the central plaza, watching the parade approach. Panaka's uniform was creased, metal insignia on his epaulets gleaming, proud and strong. Anakin Skywalker stood with Obi-Wan Kenobi near the Queen. He was feeling out of place and embarrassed. He thought the parade wonderful, and he appreciated being honored with the others, but his mind was elsewhere. It was with Qui-Gon, gone back into the Force. It was with Padme, who had barely spoken to him since he had been accepted for training by the Jedi Council. It was with his home, to which he might never return. It was with his mother, whom he wished could see him now. He wore the clothing of a Jedi Padawan, his hair cut short in the Padawan style, a student in training to become a Knight of the Order. He had achieved all that he had hoped in coming with Qui-Gon to Coruscant and beyond. He should have been happy and satisfied, and he was. But his happiness and satisfaction were clouded by the sadness he could not banish at losing Qui-Gon and his mother both. They were lost to him in different ways, to be sure, but they were gone out of his life. Qui-Gon had provided the stability he required to leave his mother behind. With the Jedi Master's death, Anakin was left adrift. There was no one who could give him the grounding that Qui-Gon had provided. Not Obi-Wan, not even Padme. One day, perhaps. One day, each of them would play a part in his life that would change him forever. He could sense that. But for now, when it mattered most, he felt all alone. So he smiled, but he was sick in spirit and lost in his heart. Perhaps sensing his discomfort, Obi-Wan reached over to put a reassuring hand on his shoulder. "It's the beginning of a new life for you, Anakin," he ventured. The boy smiled back dutifully, but said nothing. Obi-Wan looked off at the crowds in front of them. Qui-Gon always disdained celebrations, but he understood the need for them as well. I wonder what he would have made of this one. Anakin shrugged. The Jedi smiled. He would have been proud to see you a part of it. The boy looked at him. Do you think so? I do. Your mother would be proud of you as well. Anakin's mouth tightened, and he looked away. I wish she was here. I miss her. The Jedi's hand tightened on his shoulder. One day you will see her again, but when you do, you will be a Jedi Knight. The parade wound through the central plaza to where the Queen and her guests viewed the procession. She stood with her handmaidens, Governor C.O. Bibble, Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, Boss Nass of the Gungans, and the 12 members of the Jedi Council. R2-D2 occupied a space just below the handmaidens and next to Anakin and Obi-Wan, domed head swiveling from side to side, lights blinking as his sensors took everything in. R2 beeped at the boy, and Anakin touched the little droid's shell gently. Boss Nass stepped forward and held the globe of peace high over his head.
"Dis grand party!"
an exuberant Jar Jar shouted above the noise of cheering and clapping.
"Gungans and Nabu, they be friends forever, hey?"
His enthusiasm made Anakin smile in spite of himself. The Gungan was dancing up and down, long ears flapping, gangly limbs twisting this way and that as he mounted the steps. Jar Jar would never let the bad things in life get him down, the boy thought. Maybe there was a lesson to be learned in that.
"We bombard heroes, Annie!"
Jar Jar laughed, lifting his arms over his head and showing all his teeth. The boy laughed.
He guessed maybe they were. On the broad avenue below, in a long, colorful ribbon of life, the parade that had carried them to this place and time continued on.
This concludes the reading of Star Wars, Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, by Terry Brooks. This book was read by Alexander Adams.